Chapter 17. Another white frame house, still longer, and with a veranda. The hospital would have lights in the two windows of Dr. Monaghan's quarters. Even the delicate foliage of a clump of pepper trees did not stir, so breathless would be the darkness warmed by the radiation of the overheated rocks. Don Peep would stand still for a moment with the two motionless serenos before him, and, abruptly, high up on the sheer face of the mountain, dotted with single torches, like drops of fire fallen from the two great blazing clusters of lights above, the ore chutes would begin to rattle. The great clattering, shuffling noise, gathering speed and weight, would be caught up by the walls of the gorge, and sent upon the plain in a growl of thunder. The Pasadero in Rincon swore that on calm nights, by listening intently, he could catch the sound in his doorway, as of a storm in the mountains. To Charles Gould's fancy it seemed that the sound must reach the uttermost limits of the province. Riding at night towards the mine, it would meet him at the edge of a little wood just beyond Rincon. There was no mistaking the growling mutter of the mountain pouring its stream of treasure under the stamps. And it came to his heart with the peculiar force of a proclamation thundered forth over the land, and the marvelousness of an accomplished fact fulfilling an audacious desire. He had heard this very sound in his imagination on that far-off evening, when his wife and himself, after a tortuous ride through a strip of forest, had reined in their horses near the stream, and had gazed for the first time upon the jungle-grown solitude of the gorge. The head of a palm rose here and there. In a high ravine round the corner of the Santome Mountain, which is square like a blockhouse, the thread of a slender waterfall flashed bright and glassy through the dark green of the heavy fronds of tree ferns. Don Peep, in attendance, rode up and, stretching his arm up the gorge, had declared with mock solemnity, "Behold the very paradise of snakes, Sonora." And then they had wheeled their horses, and ridden back to sleep that night at Rincon. The yellow-coated and old skinny Moreno, a sergeant of Guzman Bento's time, had cleared respectfully out of his house with his three pretty daughters, to make room for the foreign Sonora and their worships the Caballeros. All he asked Charles Gould, whom he took for a mysterious and official person, to do for him was to remind the Supreme Government El Gobierno Supreme of a pension amounting to about $1 a month, to which he believed himself entitled. It had been promised to him, he affirmed, straightening his bent back martially, many years ago, for my valor in the wars with the wild Indios when a young man, senior. The waterfall existed no longer. The tree ferns that had luxuriated in its spray had died around the dried-up pool, and the high ravine was only a big trench half filled up with the refuse of excavations and tailings. The torrent, dammed up above, sent its water rushing along the open flumes of scooped tree trunks striding on trestle legs to the turbines working the stamps on the lower plateau, the Mesa Grande of the Santome Mountain. Only the memory of the waterfall, with its amazing fernery, like a hanging garden above the rocks of the gorge, was preserved in Mrs. Gould's watercolor sketch, as he had made it hastily one day from a cleared patch in the bushes, sitting in the shade of a roof of straw erected for her on three rough poles under Don Peep's direction. Mrs. Gould had seen it all from the beginning. The clearing of the wilderness, the making of the road, the cutting of new paths up the cliff face of Santome. For weeks together as he had lived on the spot with her husband, and she was so little in Sulaco during that year, that the appearance of the Gould carriage on the Alameda would cause a social excitement. From the heavy family coaches full of stately Sonoras, and black-eyed Senoritas rolling solemnly in the shaded alley, white hands were waved towards her with animation in a flutter of greetings. Dona Emilia was gone from the mountain. But not for long. Dona Emilia would be gone, to the mountain in a day or two, and her sleek carriage mules would have an easy time of it for another long spell. As he had watched the erection of the first frame house put up on the lower mesa for an office in Don Peep's quarters, she heard with a thrill of thankful emotion the first wagon load of ore rattle down the then only chute, as he had stood by her husband's side perfectly silent, and gone cold all over with excitement at the instant when the first battery of only 15 stamps was put in motion for the first time. On the occasion when the fires under the first set of retorts in their shed had glowed far into the night, she did not retire to rest on the rough cadre set up for her in the as yet bare frame house till as he had seen the first spongy lump of silver yielded to the hazards of the world by the dark depths of the Gould concession. As he had laid her unmercenary hands, with an eagerness that made them tremble, upon the first silver ingot turned out still warm from the mold, and by her imaginative estimate of its power she endowed that lump of metal with a justificative of conception, as though it were not a mere fact, but something far-reaching and impalpable, like the true expression of an emotion, or the emergence of a principle. Don Peep, extremely interested too, looked over her shoulder with a smile that, making longitudinal folds on his face, caused it to resemble a leathern mask with a benignantly diabolic expression. Would not the muchachos of Hernandez like to get hold of this insignificant object that looks, por Dios, very much like a piece of tin? He remarked, jocularly. Hernandez, the robber, had been an inoffensive small ranchero, kidnapped with circumstances of peculiar atrocity from his home during one of the civil wars, and forced to serve in the army. There his conduct as soldier was exemplary, till, watching his chance, he killed his colonel, and managed to get clear away. With a band of deserters, who chose him for their chief, he had taken refuge beyond the wild and waterless Bolson de Tenoro. The haciendas paid him blackmail in cattle and horses. Extraordinary stories were told of his powers, and of his wonderful escapes from capture. He used to ride, single-handed, into the villages and the little towns on the Campo, driving a pack mule before him, with two revolvers in his belt, go straight to the shop or store, select what he wanted, and ride away unopposed, because of the terror his exploits and his audacity inspired. Poor country people he usually left alone. The upper class were often stopped on the roads and robbed. But any unlucky official that fell into his hands was sure to get a severe flogging. The army officers did not like his name to be mentioned in their presence. His followers, mounted on stolen horses, laughed at the pursuit of the regular cavalry sent to hunt them down, and whom they took pleasure to ambush most scientifically in the broken ground of their own fastness. Expeditions had been fitted out, a price had been put upon his head, even attempts had been made, treacherously of course, to open negotiations with him, without in the slightest way affecting the even tenor of his career. At last, in true Costaguana fashion, the fiscal of Tenoro, who was ambitious of the glory of having reduced the famous Hernandez, offered him a sum of money and a safe conduct out of the country for the betrayal of his band. But Hernandez evidently was not of the stuff of which the distinguished military politicians and conspirators of Costaguana are made. This clever but common device, which frequently works like a charm in putting down revolutions, failed with the chief of vulgar saltators. It promised well for the fiscal at first, but ended very badly for the squadron of lanceros posted, by the fiscal's directions, in the fold of the ground into which Hernandez had promised to lead his unsuspecting followers. They came, indeed, at the appointed time, but creeping on their hands and knees through the bush, and only let their presence be known by a general discharge of firearms, which emptied many saddles. The troopers who escaped came riding very hard into Tenoro. It is said that their commanding officer, who, being better mounted, rode far ahead of the rest, afterwards got into a state of despairing intoxication, and beat the ambitious fiscal severely with the flat of his saber in the presence of his wife and daughters, for bringing this disgrace upon the national army. The highest civil official of Tenoro, falling to the ground in a swoon, was further kicked all over the body, and roweled with sharp spurs about the neck and face, because of the great sensitiveness of his military colleague. discuss above the inland campo, so characteristic of the rulers of the country with its story of oppression, inefficiency, fatuous methods, treachery, and savage brutality, was perfectly known to Mrs. Gould. That it should be accepted with no indignant comment by people of intelligence, refinement, and character as something inherent in the nature of things was one of the symptoms of degradation that had the power to exasperate her almost to the verge of despair. Still looking at the ingot of silver, she shook her head at Don Peep's remark, "If it had not been for the lawless tyranny of your government, Don Peep, many an outlaw now with Hernandez would be living peaceably and happy by the honest work of his hands." "Sonora," cried Don Peep, with enthusiasm, "it is true. It is as if God had given you the power to look into the very breasts of people. You have seen them working round you, dona Emilia meek as lambs, patient like their own burrows, brave like lions. I have led them to the very muzzles of guns I, who stand here before you, Sonora in the time of peace, who was full of generosity and encourage only approached by the uncle of Don Carlos here, as far as I know. No wonder there are bandits in the campo when there are none but thieves, swindlers, and sanguinary macaques to rule us in Sta. Marta. However, all the same, a bandit is a bandit, and we shall have a dozen good straight Winchesters to ride with the silver down to Sulaco." Mrs. Gould's ride with the first silver escort to Sulaco was the closing episode of what she called Y Camp life before S.E. had settled in her townhouse permanently, as was proper and even necessary for the wife of the administrator of such an important institution as the San Tome Mine. For the San Tome Mine was to become an institution, a rallying point for everything in the province that needed order and stability to live. Security seemed to flow upon this land from the mountain gorge. The authorities of Sulaco had learned that the San Tome Mine could make it worth their while to leave things and people alone. This was the nearest approach to the rule of common sense and justice Charles Gould felt it possible to secure at first. In fact, the mine, with its organization, its population growing fiercely attached to their position of privileged safety, with its armory, with its Don Peep, with its armed body of Serenos where, it was said, many an outlaw and deserter, and even some members of Hernandez's band had found a place, the mine was a power in the land. As a certain prominent man in Sta. Marta had exclaimed with a hollow laugh, once, when discussing the line of action taken by the Sulaco authorities at a time of political crisis, "You call these men government officials? They? Never. They are officials of the mine, officials of the concession, I tell you." The prominent man, who was then a person in power, with a lemon-colored face and a very short and curly, not to say woolly, head of hair, went so far in his temporary discontent as to shake his yellow fist under the nose of his interlocutor and shriek, "Yes! All! Silence! All! I tell you! The political chief, the chief of the police, the chief of the customs, the general, all, are the officials of that Gould." Thereupon an intrepid, but low and argumentative murmur would flow on for a space in the ministerial cabinet, and the prominent man's passion would end in a cynical shrug of the shoulders. After all, he seemed to say, what did it matter, as long as the minister himself was not forgotten during his brief day of authority? But all the same, the unofficial agent of the San Tome Mine, working for a good cause, had his moments of anxiety, which were reflected in his letters to Don Jose Avellanos, his maternal uncle. No sanguinary macaque from Sta. Marta shall set foot on that part of Costaguana which lies beyond the San Tome Bridge, Don Peep used to assure Mrs. Gould. He except, of course, as an honored guest for our senior administrator is a deep politico. But to Charles Gould, in his own room, the old major would remark with a grim and soldierly cheeriness, "We are all playing our heads at this game. Don Jose Avellanos with Mother Imperium in Imperio, Emilia, my soul, with an air of profound self-satisfaction which, somehow, in a curious way, seemed to contain a queer admixture of bodily discomfort. But that, perhaps, could only be visible to the initiated. And for the initiated it was a wonderful place, this drawing room of the Casa Gould, with its momentary glimpses of the Master El Senior Administrator older, harder, mysteriously silent, with the lines deepened on his English, ruddy, out-of-doors complexion, flitting on his thin cavalryman's legs across the doorways, either just back from the mountain, or with jingling spurs and riding whip under his arm, on the point of starting for the mountain. Then Don Peep, modestly martial in his chair, the Lanero who seemed somehow to have found his martial jocularity, his knowledge of the world, and his manner perfect for his station, in the midst of savage armed contests with his kind. Avellanos, polished and familiar, the diplomatist with his loquacity covering much caution and wisdom in delicate advice, with his manuscript of a historical work on Costaguana, entitled 50 Years of Misrule, which, at present, he thought it was not prudent even if it were possible, oh give to the world, these three, and also Dona Emilia amongst them, gracious, small, and fairy-like, before the glittering tea set, with one common master thought in their heads, with one common feeling of a tense situation, with one ever-present aim to preserve the inviolable character of the mine at every cost. And there was also to be seen Captain Mitchell, a little apart, near one of the long windows, with an air of old-fashioned neat old bachelorhood about him, slightly pompous, in a white waistcoat, a little disregarded and unconscious of it, utterly in the dark, and imagining himself to be in the thick of things. The good man, having spent a clear 30 years of his life on the high seas, before getting what he called a core billet, was astonished at the importance of transactions other than relating to shipping, which take place on dry land. Almost every event out of the usual daily course arced an epoch for him, or else was history, unless with his pomposity struggling with a discomfited droop of his rubicund, rather handsome face, set off by snow-white close hair and short whiskers, he would mutter, "Ah, that, sir, was a mistake." The reception of the first consignment of San Tome silver for shipment to San Francisco in one of the O.S.S. N. Company's mail boats had, of course, marked an epoch for Captain Mitchell. The ingots packed in boxes of stiff oxhide with plated handles, small enough to be carried easily by two men, were brought down by the serenos of the mine walking in careful couples along the half-mile or so of steep, zigzag paths to the foot of the mountain. There they would be loaded into a string of two-wheeled carts, resembling roomy coffers with a door at the back, and harnessed tandem with two mules each, waiting under the guard of armed and mounted serenos. Don Peep padlocked each door in succession, and at the signal of his whistle the string of carts would move off, closely surrounded by the clank of spur and carbon, with jolts and cracking of whips, with a sudden deep rumble over the boundary bridge, though the land of thieves and sanguinary macaques. Don Peep defined that crossing, hats bobbing in the first light of the dawn, on the heads of cloaked figures, Winchesters on hip, bridle hands protruding lean and brown from under the falling folds of the ponchos. The convoy skirting a little wood, along the mine trail, between the mud huts and low walls of Rincon, increased its pace on the Camino Real, mules urged to speed, escort galloping, Don Carlos riding alone ahead of a dust storm affording a vague vision of long ears of mules, of fluttering little green and white flags stuck upon each cart, of raised arms, in a mob of sombreros with the white gleam of ranging eyes, and Don Peep, hardly visible in the rear of that rattling dust trail, with a stiff seat and impassive Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.